welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. I hope everyone's having an absolutely wonderful day today, and have some couple little things I wanted to address today based on the shooting that I forgot to bring up yesterday, and then have a lot of other news that we're going to go in today. But first, how are you doing today, Dan?
Austin, I'm absolutely blessed. I got up this morning at 5 o'clock, started doing show prep, and then about an hour or so ago, my good friend Brad Parton showed up, and he's sitting here. He's my live studio audience today here at the house where I'm doing the show. And so it should be a pretty good show, and I'll be asking Brad for some feedback here in a moment. But it's been a great day so far, and it's a lot better than Trump's having. I mean, there's an article just came out from the Washington Watcher, and it says that Trump blows the El Paso response and maybe his election, and he better hope that Congress fails to pass his terrible proposals. It goes on to say Donald Trump responded to the El Paso and Dayton shootings in the worst way possible. He called for more gun control and the death penalty for hate crimes and more tech censorship. It's a plan Kamala Harris would envy if she implemented it and would let the federal government silence Trump voters on social media and take their guns. In other words, we'd all just shut up, not say anything on social media, and then we still take their guns. Trump also speculated this plan should be paired with the immigration reform, a term that he left undefined, but conventionally that's used to mean amnesty, instead of defending his supporters or shifting the focus into the Antifa Dayton shooter. He capitulated to the mainstream media narrative again.
Yep.
He received no credit, and Democrats and journalists continue to blame the president for the El Paso massacre, and some even for Dayton. The president's disastrous response was one of the lowest points of his presidency, and it may cost him the election if the American population and his Christian right wake up. Guys, I'm going to say something to you. I wrote a book years ago. It's called Maximum Solutions to ADD, Autism, and Learning Disabilities. Now, I did a whole chapter in there on shootings, a whole shooting on what happened with Columbine and everything else back in the 90s. The book was released in the early 2000s. And I went into detail on psychotropic drugs that were being used in almost every single one of the cases of the shooters. These people are on drugs. Their mental health is shot. And people aren't realizing that. I mean, we have to understand that this psychiatric drug phenomenon that we have is invasive. Okay? Nearly every mass shooting incident in the last 20 years and multiple other incidents of suicide and isolated shootings all share one thing in common, and it's not an AR-15. It's not a .223 weapon. It's psychiatric drugs. The overwhelming evidence points to the single largest contributor of all of these for taking powerful psychotropic drugs. Multiple credible scientific studies going back more than a decade, as well as internal documents from certain pharmaceutical companies that suppress the information, show that SSRI, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, have well-known but unreported side effects, including but not limited to suicide and other violent behavior, including mass shootings. One need only Google relevant keywords, if they haven't been blocked at this point, to see for themselves. Guys, it's so important that we understand this, that when people start taking psychiatric drugs, they're not themselves anymore. They're messing with their brain chemistry. You have to understand that. Eric Harris, age 17, first on Zoloft, then Luvox, and Dylan Kybold, 18, Columbine, they killed 12 students, a teacher, and wounded 23 others before killing themselves on psychiatric drugs. Jeff Weiss, age 16, was prescribed 60 milligrams of Prozac a day. He's another mass shooter. Corey Bagstart, age 16, was on Paxil, which caused him to have hallucinations when he took a rifle to his high school and held 23 classmates hostage. He has no memory of the event. Chris Fetters, age 13, killed his favorite aunt while taking Prozac. Christopher Pittman, age 12, murdered both his grandparents while taking Zoloft. Matthew Miller, age 13, hung himself in his bedroom after taking Zoloft for 6 days. That happens, by the way, a lot. Kip Kintle, age 15, on Prozac and Ritalin, shot his parents while they slept, then went to school and opened fire, killing two more classmates. I can just keep reading. This list goes on and on and on and on for page after page. This is what we have now in the United States. And so what they do, in my opinion, is some of these real shooters. These are the real shooters, the guys who they really wind up and turn loose. You know, those are the ones who basically have been programmed, like with MKUltra, with, you know, like Nazi mind control stuff, from Gottlieb, Doctor of Death, the guy who started the MKUltra stuff way back when, worked with the CIA. That guy developed all this stuff. But the problem with these guys are, let me say something real quick. The problem with these guys are they're marginal at best as far as following through and getting things done and making sure they kill themselves. There you go. I did say that, didn't I? So what ends up happening is it's easier to send a four-man fire team in, so you have multiple reports that say, multiple shooters in black, all dressed in black, and then post a picture of some guy standing in front of Walmart that we don't even know if he ever discharged a round wearing headset and wearing goggles. You don't even know if you ever fired a shot. Walmart, every Walmart has over 100 cameras. There are cameras everywhere in Walmart. Do it for shoplifting. Why can't we see the videotapes? Why can't we see all the videotapes from Walmart and show this guy they have in the photograph shooting people? Why can't we see that? How do we know he wasn't self? How do we know that it wasn't a photo edit shot and he wasn't even standing there? They just put him on the screen with a blue or green screen behind him. How do we know he didn't do that? We don't know. That's the problem. Now, are these people getting shot for real? I don't know. I hope not. My condolences to the family if they did get shot. But what about the doctor? The doctor at the Pulse gay nightclub shooting in Orlando, who said that she removed all these bullets from all of these victims, and we find out later she wasn't even a real doctor. The whole thing was a lie. Was she a crisis actor that they had hired to play the part of a doctor to get her on camera? And suddenly she got so much recognition from that that she decided to play that role to the point of running for state Congress? Yeah, that doctor. Fake doctor. Yeah, that one. What the heck is going on? Does everything have to be a lie these guys are saying? What do you think, Oz?
Yeah, I mean, there's some big questions. And one thing that I wanted to bring up is I didn't really tie this together yesterday correctly like I should have. And I'm going to really tie it together right now because this is something that is huge. This is something that nobody has been talking about in mainstream media or alternative media whatsoever. I told you guys yesterday I had skimmed through a lot of the manifestos. It was kind of long. And I saw a couple spots and I went back and I reread some of it yesterday after the show. Now, here's something that ties in. Remember I told you guys in the photos, in the one photo of him walking into the store, he has no gloves on. Zero gloves. Allegedly shot 50 plus people, right? Running an AK, Wasser AK, which is super hot gun anyways after a couple mags. You're going to chew your fingers up. You're going to burn yourself. Well, I do all that. I've already used those guns way before I already read this yesterday. Well, in his manifesto, and I'm going to quote this verbatim, not quoting him because I like what he says. I'm quoting him because I want you guys to understand what he said allegedly in this manifesto, which is going to mean either one or two things in a second here. Listen to me very clearly. It says right here, gear. It's a subsection. AK-47. I realized pretty quickly that this isn't a great choice since it's a civilian version of the AK-47, the Wasser 10. It is not designed to shoot rounds quickly, so it overheats massively after 100 shots fired in quick succession. I will have to use heat-resistant gloves to get around this. End quote. And then he goes into detail discussing the round that he's using as far as it's going to increase because it has bullet fragmentation, it decreases penetration, so it acts more like a hollow point. He blatantly says in his manifesto, the gun massively overheats, so he's running heat-resistant gloves. But wait a minute. If he's that sharp and he's writing this in his manifesto, you didn't just forget the gloves in your car. You didn't put your headset on. You didn't put your goggles on. You didn't grab your AK. You didn't rack the slide on it and then go inside and go, oh, man. Oh, I forgot my gloves. Doggone, I forgot my gloves. Oh, well, I'm just going to continue going on this shooting spree while I burn myself basically down to the core trying to operate this gun and cut myself on the rigid stamp receiver that these AK-47s are built out of. So either we have the kid that's in the photo didn't write the manifesto, or the manifesto is not the same person that was in the shooting, or none of them are correlated with one another. Think about this for a second. He went out of his way to discuss the fact that AK that he is running overheats, so he's going to wear gloves, and then we see him allegedly in the only photo they've released with him anywhere near Walmart with a gun running an AK with no gloves whatsoever, knowing that gun's going to overheat. And I told you guys yesterday, with the amount of bullets that were dispensed in order to have that level of kill radius, that level of kill mount, and that amount of injury, you're looking at hundreds of rounds dispersed, probably anywhere between 6 to 8 magazines minimum, meaning he would have been loaded down. He would have had magazines in his pants, magazines in his pockets, magazines tucked down the back of his shirt, and magazines everywhere. Not to mention AK mags are extremely bulky and heavy. didn't look like that in the photo. Now, here's the next thing that you guys are going to get that's going to really, really get you right here. Almost every mainstream news article, AP, CNN, all of them have discussed the victims, right? We've seen that now. Oh, there's Mexican nationalists, there's individuals here and there. Goes into detail about who was shot. Okay. Every single mainstream news outlet has confirmed that the first people shot were Jessica Coca Garcia and Mimo Garcia. Okay? That's not argument there. That's what they have said to us, allegedly making it facts. And I'll quote here from the AP. Jessica Coca Garcia and Mimo Garcia were wounded while fundraising for their 5-year-old son's baseball team. The couple was at the front door of Walmart when the suspect reportedly shot them. Jessica's mother, Norma Coca, told AP her daughter was shot 3 times in the leg and her son-in-law was shot 2 times in the leg and 1 in the back. Jessica's stable condition while Mimo's in critical condition. So wait a minute here. So we're saying we have some of the first 2 victims that were hit in total 6 times at either the very front of the store or while going into the front of the store. Now, I'm sure everybody has seen the alleged photo they released. Do you see anyone on the entryway on the ground? Do you see blood splatter, blood drip? Do you see brass? Do you see him moving in a position that he would have moved in to shoot somebody at the front door? Do you see anybody running or yelling anywhere around that vicinity? No, you don't. You don't see anything in that photo. You see him walking in with a gun at low ready, nobody in the picture other than him, no brass, no gun smoke, no blood, no victims, nobody running, nobody whatsoever in that photo other than him. But mainstream media has allegedly said that these 2 individuals were shot at the front door. And here's the next thing you have to ask yourself the question. As I already told you before, you're going to have multiple rounds on target and end up have kill shots and that many people wounded in Walmart, over 50 people. Well, the first victim was shot 3 times in the leg. The second victim was shot 2 in the leg and 1 in the back. That's 6 rounds already dispensed. 30-round magazine that he has in the photo, that means he's down to 24 rounds already before he even gets in the store to start shooting. Second aspect, you have to ask yourself this question. If this guy's main goal was to create as much death and carnage as possible, when you are walking into the front door and you are literally in a point-blank engagement with somebody that's unarmed, why the heck are you going to shoot them 3 times in the leg and shoot the other victim 2 in the leg and 1 in the back? If you're at that close range with an AK, why are you not going to put rounds on center mass target or headshots? It's just a question I'm asking. Just a simple question. I don't know. That's why I'm asking the question. I've never seen somebody go into a shooting where they want to kill somebody and they shoot everybody in the leg at the front door. These are the questions that we need to be asking. Why is he saying in the manifesto he's running gloves because the gun overheats? In the photo, he has no gloves on. Why do we have the first 2 victims who are allegedly at the front door shot 6 times, yet we don't see anybody at the front door, nor any blood, nor any breath, nor any smoke, nor anybody positioning from that individual that he just got an engagement? None, zero. Walks in like he's going to go shopping. Just happened to brought his AK with him. Okay? These are the things we need to be looking at, and we need to demand that the video footage is released. Remember, we saw Columbine. We got to see that. I mean, as graphic as it was, you saw them walking around the school, the Tech 9, shooting at everybody. Walmart has 100 cameras, like Dad said, if not more. I mean, people get busted for stealing razors out of Walmart. But yet, we can't get footage from somebody walking through half the store with an AK-47 gunning down 52 people? That is what we need to be asking. Because now, with the hype and hysteria that has gone on, everybody is completely and totally in fear in this country. Well, I shouldn't say everybody. A large percentage of the population that doesn't know how to defend themselves. For example, Times Square now had a massive panic last night. A motorcycle driving right down Times Square backfired multiple times. Hundreds of New Yorkers started stampeding in every direction and screaming it was a mass shooting. 22 people were injured and 4 of them had to go to the hospital simply from tripping over one another in Times Square. Police got there and said, oh, it was a motorcycle, backfired 3 times. Everybody just needs to calm down. Oh, but then we also had another shooting at Walmart yesterday. Oh, wow, nobody talked about that. Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Allegedly a gang member, black individual, white shirt, long pants, shot at another individual inside Walmart. Missed the individual, hit an innocent bystander. That's interesting. We didn't hear about that in mainstream media. Why? Because it was a gang-related shooting. It didn't follow the narrative that he went in. He didn't go in with an AK or an AR. He didn't push the narrative for gun control. They don't want to discuss the fact that over 80% of all shootings involve handguns. That rifles are actually a very, very small percentage of shootings in the United States. They don't want to discuss that the fact that the only way truly, if you were really wanting to implement gun control and stop any type of shooting in the United States, would be full-blown mass confiscation of the over 400 million firearms we have in the United States. That's the only way. If you want to look at it, real talk, if you want to say nobody can be able to shoot one another in this country, we have to confiscate over 400 million firearms by force in this country and make it a felony to possess any firearm whatsoever. They're not going to do that. It's physically impossible. And even if you did do that, look at London. Look at Australia. Look at all these countries that have already done it. What are they at? Knifings on a daily basis. Beatings with baseball bats, axes, machetes. Oh, that's cool. So we're removing guns, but we're going medieval. Now we get to hack on each other with machetes. So I guess I can't have a firearm, but I need to walk around the samurai sword so I don't get hacked to death by some crazy lunatic with a machete. Okay, I guess we just swapped out one death tool for another. This is what they don't want to discuss. Gun control does not work. Men, since the beginning of time, have tried to kill one another, whether it's with a spear, an axe, a sword, a knife, a chain, dirt, sand, or their bare hands. People kill each other. We have a sinful nature. So disarming a population and taking their ability to be able to protect themselves and their family with a very effective tool, but simply turning around and allowing criminals to still own those tools, which is what the Democrats and communists and now Republicans are supporting. Red flag gun laws, assault weapon bans. These do nothing. These do nothing but give lip service to the people that want to feel better. It's simply pixie dust to make individuals feel safer in a society that is becoming more and more dangerous due to the more restrictive laws that we have. Most shootings were in gun-free zones. Walmart, from my knowledge, when I looked up, they do not, their policy as far as they don't like firearms in their store. Same thing in Dayton, Ohio. This is a place of nuisance. Bars, area, drinking alcohol. You can't carry a firearm in a place of nuisance. Not saying that anything would have stopped, that somebody would have had a firearm there, been able to defend themselves. I don't know. Just speculation. But what I'm saying is doing knee-jerk reactions and talking the hardcore rhetoric like Trump did yesterday does absolutely zero to protect the population and does absolutely everything to compromise the constitutional rights of the American population now. We know for a fact that once this goes sideways, once they have the ability, I mean, Trump said yesterday, he promised to give the FBI, and I quote, whatever they need to investigate and disrupt hate crimes and domestic terrorism. Let that sink in for a minute. The FBI, whatever they need, in a post-9/11 America, giving the FBI whatever they need when we know that over 70 documented times they have been involved in not only encouraging, but arming domestic terrorists in the United States only so they could turn around and foil the plot and make themselves look like they did some big giant hoorah. We know for a fact that when they were involved as far as with Randy Weaver, ATF directly tried to bust him by getting them to buy basically 12-gauge shotguns that were an inch shorter than ATF regulation so they could turn around and bust him. We saw the same thing with the dog on Waco, with the Branch Davidians. He bought AR-15 receivers. ATF tried to go in there and bust him with a full raid because he had allegedly turned one into a machine gun. We know that these guys will go above and beyond to do whatever they have to do to protect the globalist bankers that are behind this policy and bringing in a new world order and disarming the country. We know that back in 2016, May of 2016, just to be exact, that we had Fox News release the fact that the United Nations released that the United States has now said it will support the set of Kigali principles that give a green light for U.S. peacekeeping troops and police to use force to protect civilians in armed conflicts in the United States. U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power told high-level UN meeting that Wednesday in May of 2016 that they were focused on the responsibility to protect the citizens of the United States and humbled to join the 28 other countries that pledged to abide by the 18 pledges. The UN peacekeepers from these 29 countries are now required to act in cases where civilians are in danger. The Kigali principles are designed to make sure civilians are not abandoned in a international or domestic crisis. We already know it's happened 3 years ago now. The United States signed on to it. That the UN has the legitimate international right per our U.S. signature to invade the United States by force if there is a civil unrest. And now who would you think would be the target of that civil unrest? Now that we know that conspiracy theory-driven domestic extremists are now considered threats to the United States, now that we've heard the term white nationalist over almost 1,000 times just in the last 5 days on mainstream media, the fact that the term white nationalist and white supremacist is now being used on almost every single news outlet and news story involving the shooting now, who in the world do you think is going to be the first target when the United Nations comes in here, considering the fact that they already have a list of individuals now that have said things on social media that don't go the direction of the narrative they want it to go? Oh, and that's right, and the fact that there's a high probability we're going to have federal red flag gun law signed into law this year by Trump, and that will literally give the United Nations the green light to confiscate firearms per federal law that's completely illegal, but it's illegal law, I guess you could say. So put all these things together and then take it back to the very beginning. Why are we not being told the truth? Or if we are allegedly being told the truth, why can't we see the truth? Release the video. That is the demand that the United States population has to come together on, just like we demanded they release the video of the Las Vegas shooting. And we found out real quick with that SWAT raid when they went in there and there was about 50 spent brass casings on the floor. That's it. Zero broke windows, but yet we heard the mainstream media say he dispensed thousands of rounds from his room and broke two windows out, shooting from each window. I've been to Vegas. You go up 300-400 feet in the air and crack two windows out in a penthouse suite, you're going to have a cross breeze like you've never felt up there. Blinds are going to be blowing. It's going to be unbelievably windy. They walk in still, like a still lake, not even moving. That's what we saw in there, which showed us real quick it was a complete and total lie, which, of course, the mainstream media never admitted to, but we know the truth now. Let's see the video. Let's find out what really happened in El Paso, and let's find out for ourselves and make our own decisions what really happened instead of believing the lying mainstream communist media did. Are you with me, bud? Have we lost Ted, Todd?
No, Brad was talking to me about transgenders and weightlifting competition. I apologize, but can you hear me okay now?
I can hear you fine.
I was listening to you in the other ear, and I was listening to Brad on this ear, and I'm trying to... But you're absolutely right. Everything you say about what happened in Vegas, everything you say about all of these things going on, it's all real. And the problem is, I was talking to Brad again during the break, and you basically... And I... Nobody else talks about it but us. I mean, we're it. That was a phenomenal little rant that you just did. But one thing I want to tie together that nobody's really touching is this. These mass shootings, they kind of are following patterns of FBI terror plots that have been documented by the New York Times. Remember this?
Yep.
Agents are recruiting social media extremists to frame and scapegoats for engineered violence. The FBI has known to do this for years and years and years. Remember? With that, the FBI conspired with Hillary Clinton and the Obama administration to destroy Clinton's email hard drives as a means to eliminate any evidence of Hillary's prosecutable culpability in her crimes. I mean, former FBI Director James Comey is now known to have run multiple criminal schemes to illegally frame the Trump administration while clearing Obama-era officials as part of a treasonous deep state plot to overthrow the United States of America to defeat President Trump. All of this stuff is happening around us with the FBI. The FBI is running a massive coordinated psyop on America. Is that possible? And the goal is to demonize all Trump supporters, paint illegal aliens as victims, and engage the mind-controlled left to the point of mass armed insurrection led by Antifa terrorists to form a civil war. Would the FBI be capable of this? You better believe they would, because they're working directly with the CIA, which is not what they're not supposed to be doing. And you've got to remember, the international banking cartel controls all of it. All of it. Because, guys, you got to follow the money and all of this stuff. I mean, think about it for a second. Donald Trump says, you know, we're never going to have gun control. We're never going to take your weapons. All the stuff he said this 4 years ago. Now all of a sudden he wants to take weapons. Red flag gun laws, pushing them all over the country. Here's the irony. Here's the irony of all of it. Okay? Guys, if I'm Donald Trump and I'm saying all of this stuff, and all of a sudden somebody comes to me and says, we're going to have a little chit-chat, a little meeting, and we're not going to talk about, you know, this to the public, but we're going to tell you that you're going to be the most celebrated president by the conservative right, by the Christian conservatives, since Ronald Reagan. You're going to be 8 years in the White House. You're going to have a pension to dream for. We're going to make sure that we maintain all of your loans with all of your Trump properties, and you're going to be worth more money when you get out than you've ever dreamed of. Your family's going to be just basically put up on pedestals, and you're going to have this incredible life for the rest of your life, forever and ever. Or we're going to kill your family. We're going to kill your kids. We're going to kill your grandkids. We're going to kill everybody in your families, and they're all going to die in a plane crash or whatever. We're going to ruin you financially, and we're going to impeach you on top of everything else. And then what you're going to go down as one of the most hated, one of the most reviled, despicable presidents in the history of the White House. In addition to that, you'll be bankrupt and gone, and the memory of you people will spit. So you pick which one you want. And pretty much I got a feeling that's what's happened to our president. But I really believe, and I said this yesterday and I said it before, I really believe that Donald Trump, Austin, when he started this, when he really got going, he really started doing the rallies, because he worked too hard to make it happen. He did too many rallies to make it happen. He did too much of everything to make it happen to be turning on his base the way he is now. And we need to understand that's what's going on. We have to figure out how to bring him back. Because I don't want to believe, I really don't want to believe, that everything he said in the beginning was to take us to this point right now. Had Obama tried to get any of this stuff passed with red flag gun laws, the Patriots would have been up in arms. We would have had million-man marches in Washington. But all I hear from the mainstream media, as far as the Christian side, are crickets. Crickets. Because they've all been sold and bought into believing that this guy is doing something good for America. Guys, we've got to wake up. By the way, we're going to change topics here. We've done enough of this now. Boy Scouts, this is from NBC News, have a pedophile epidemic and are hiding hundreds in its ranks lawyers who are suing the Boy Scouts claim. The Boy Scouts of America continue to cover up a pedophile epidemic in their organization, a group of lawyers alleged Tuesday in a new lawsuit. The abused and scouting lawyers said they've identified 350 previously unknown scoutmasters and volunteers who allegedly preyed on boys and whose names were not known to law enforcement or in the BSA's internal database, Boy Scouts of America, which critics have been called perversion files. You can't look at these files and not come to the conclusion this was a massive problem that was hidden, attorney Tom Krosoff said at a press conference. We know that when a pedophile abuses a victim, it's not just one, added attorney Stuart Eisenberg. So each of the 350 abusers have dozens of other victims who have not yet come forward. Wow. The revelation that the lawyers had identified a small army who they claim are previously unknown to scout sex abusers was contained in the lawsuit filed Monday in Philadelphia by a Pennsylvania man identified only as J.D., who claims he was assaulted hundreds of times, over a span of 4 years in the 70s. J.D., who lives in Wilkes-Barre now, identified his attacker in the lawsuit as Paul Antosh, who also lives in Pennsylvania City. And, you know, and guys, I could keep reading this article, but I'm not going to. This is all part of the Frankfurt School. They had to destroy nationalism. They had to destroy Boy Scouts. They had to destroy belief in Jesus Christ. They had to do this. The Boy Scouts were all about Christianity. They had to come in and do this. The same reason that happened to the Catholic Church. They had to put the pedophile priests in. They had to come in with, you know, Vatican II and change, you know, all the stuff that the Vatican did back in the 60s and bring it into the New Age, you know, with all of its, you know, corruption. You know, it's one of the things that John F. Kennedy was so upset about, and one of the things that Mel Gibson was so upset about. I mean, all of these things have happened in our lifetime, or my lifetime, a lot of our lifetimes, and we see it now. Another example. This, I just saw this morning from the Christian circles. Christian author Joshua Harris wrote a huge book about Christian faith and about not dating and basically courtship and getting married and basically being pure before you got married. He just came out now and says, I am not a Christian. Joshua Harris, the best-selling author of I Kissed Dating Goodbye, who previously announced that he was separating from his wife, said Friday he no longer considers himself a Christian. Because I Kissed Dating Goodbye was one of the most popular Christian books in the late 90s and early 2000s among Christian families and singles who embraced the courtship model, which is a great model, by the way. Harris then went to the pastor of a congregation, Covenant Life Church in Maryland, and became pastor. In mid-July, Harris and his wife announced they were separating. In recent years, significant changes have taken place for both of them. And then now he says he's no longer a Christian, and now he's accepting and embracing the lesbian gay community. Now, I specifically want to add this to the list now to the LGBTQ community that I want to say that I'm sorry for the views that I taught in my books in the past regarding sexuality, he wrote. I regret standing against marriage equality, for not affirming you in your place in the church, and for your way, any ways that my writing and my speaking contributed to a culture of exclusion and bigotry. I hope you can forgive me. Now, I have to stop here for a second. I'm going to talk about this for just 1 second, because I don't like talking about stuff like this, so I'm going to. This is what we have now. This is what's happening in the United States due to the inclusion message that we're having from the Christian churches. This is what is happening in the United States, because what we're doing here is we are actually allowing people like this guy, pastors in the pulpit, the pansy preachers wearing the panties, who aren't alpha males, who basically want to come in and basically say what they want to say, do what they want to do, act how they want to act, and they have no true understanding of what Christianity is. Christianity is not about Sunday morning going to church. Christianity is about having a relationship with the Most High God through His Son, Jesus Christ. A real relationship. This guy became an author, probably made some good money from his book sales, probably was on the speaking circuit for a while, got pushed up, and suddenly, 20 years later, people have not remembered who he was anymore, so now he's decided to go ahead and come out of the closet. There you go. I can't be more direct than that. And guys, here's the problem with all of this. This is what we're going to see happen in so many of these churches with these name it, claim it, blab it, grab it weirdos who are preaching. I know another man, and I'm not going to say any names, but I'm going to be very careful here. And I will say this, that, no, I'm not going to say that. But he's been married 3 times. He's divorced now. He has a church in Tampa. That's as far as I'll go. And he basically brought a hooker, a whore, on the platform to introduce her to his congregation, to tell the people in his church that this is his new workout partner. And if they see her with him, it's okay because it's his workout partner. Now, for any of you who believe that, we got some swampland to sell you. And of course, right after that, him and his wife, they get together and they walk up on the platform and they make an announcement that suddenly they're not going to be together anymore. And I could go further with this, and you guys would know who it was, because his wife has come to national prominence now, and I won't mention her name. She's also a preacher. And this is the leadership that we have now here in the Christian churches, who are being promoted on Christian TV and other Christians as examples of what we're supposed to follow. Now, I'm not saying that you can't be divorced, because I'm divorced. I was married once for 3 years, got divorced, scriptural grounds. Been married to my current wife, my wonderful wife, my wife, my love of my life for 35 years. We'll be married to her for the rest of my life. And we can have those things happen to us because things happen. But guys, a hooker? A hooker on the platform on Sunday morning? This is my workout partner? And the church just accepts it. They didn't leave by the droves. They didn't get up and walk out. They continue to tithe and continue to give money. Now, eventually, when this got worse and worse and worse, nobody getting to tell you more about it, then it would get so bad that you'd know who it is. A lot of the church did leave. They had a church of about 10,000 people. I think he probably has a few hundred left. And I can say one thing to you. I know him extremely well. And I can pretty much tell you
that he lies a lot about everything. And you got to ask yourself a question. Why in the world do we hold these people up to be our leaders? And then they come out 20 years later and go, oh, by the way, I want to apologize to the gay and lesbian groups. Okay. Look, I'm going to say this again, and I've said it 100 times. I'm going to say it again. If a person wants to be gay, and it's their business, and they're not flaunting it or trying to force it on me or my family, whatever they do in their bedroom, it's between them, whoever they're with, their relationship with God and Christ, and if they have one, if they ever have had one, is between them. It's not me. I'm not going to judge anybody. Let judge not, lest he be judged. I'm going to pray for them that God will show them where the truth is. But guys, to come out now and have a church and have be well known and openly accept all of this stuff is, again, it shows you where his lack of depth is and his unwillingness to do what he's supposed to do as far as from a Christian leadership standpoint. See, so guys, it's so important if you're in a church that you understand who the pastor is and what they believe. I told you guys years ago, I had a pastor who was a pastor mine in Tallahassee when I first got saved. And I ended up coming out and find out later he's in the closet. He's a closet gay guy. And the church knew about it and they kept him in that position. You can't do stuff like that. You know, if you're going to be in the world, you can't be in the church at the same time. That's a double-minded man. They're unstable in all that they do, think, and say. So you have to understand that. So we've got a group of people now who have infiltrated the pulpits, who don't have true relationships with Christ, and who are leading the flock astray, and we're supposed to sit here and give them money every Sunday and accept their teachings. I must say, we are truly in the latter days. I mean, when men are falling away. And it's sad to me that Joshua Harris has come out and done this now. He's openly saying, I am not a Christian. The best-selling author of I Kissed Dating Goodbye. And the sad part about it is, how many other people who see him as a leader, as a mentor, are going to follow his example now because he's going to confuse so many people. Guys, it's so important that we understand who and what we are in Christ. Don't allow this Frankfurt School teaching to come in and do these things to you and your family and to your churches and to your neighborhoods. Very, very, very important. One more story. Barney's, the huge retailer, basically is filing bankruptcy now, and it has closed most of its own stores. It's been around for about 100 years, I guess. And the iconic Clothier, founded almost a century ago, will keep the doors open at its 10-story Madison Avenue store, but it secured $75 million in financing to pay employees and vendors as it seeks a buyer. The stores in Chicago, Las Vegas, Seattle will all be closing, along with 12 concept and warehouse locations. Stores in Beverly Hills and a bunch of other ones in San Francisco will remain open, as well as two warehouse locations in New York. Guys, again, this is the fascist corporate involvement with the government controlled by the Rothschild banking cartels, Amazon takeover of retail and the markets. What do you think, Austin?
This is exactly what's going on. I mean, the thing about it is, too, I mean, that we haven't even seen now, you know, we have seen it. It just happened last week, and I didn't really touch base on it because I was kind of watching it again. The Department of Justice has now fully approved the Sprint-T-Mobile merger, creating the largest wireless carrier in United States history. And, of course, if you guys remember the big commercial they did with Sprint and T-Mobile, the big rollout that they did, they went and said the 5G network is our main number one priority. We are putting all of our resources and assets into it to make sure we have 5G as fast as possible. And, of course, then they went on their whole spiel about how great it is, how fast it is, how amazing it is. And remember, I busted it a couple weeks ago. I got the real numbers. I told you 4G operates in about 50 milliseconds as far as download speed, as far as per each thing that does, 50 milliseconds. And 5G is going to operate between 1 to 5 milliseconds. Completely and totally obfuscating real facts, they're kind of come out and say, well, it's going to be 25 times faster. Yeah, it's going from 50 milliseconds to 5 milliseconds. Woohoo! I mean, crazy. Even though you're not going to know one lickety-split difference about it. But Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint will now control 95% of the market, so much so that DOJ finally had to do just something to keep people basically from coming unglued about it. They are now making sure that Dish will be able to catch up to its much larger rivals. The addition to Sprint's prepaid business that Dish is going to collect, who have access to T-Mobile's network for 7 years after the spinoff, and Dish will also buy a portfolio of spectrum from Sprint as well. Acquisitions and mergers. I will not be surprised in the very near future that Dish is bought up by Sprint and T-Mobile merger, whatever they come out, whatever their new name is, in the next couple years. They're more than likely going to acquire them. And then at some point in time, once the bankers get greedy enough and 5G is rolled out effectively enough, and they want to make even more and more and more money and have a full-blown monopoly, which they will eventually do, they will probably have a merge between the T-Mobile, Dish, Sprint, and Verizon network. Or they'll just leave them how they are because they more than likely control both of them anyways. Hence why Verizon is pushing 5G, T-Mobile and Sprint's hammering 5G and so forth, and that's just the way they're going to roll out with it. Told you guys last week, there's a company called Wheel Pros. Now, you guys know I'm a lot of truck stuff and car stuff, and it's a wheel company that produces forged wheels. Well, actually, they don't produce technically anything. They've gone in and bought up almost every single wheel manufacturer in the United States now and are essentially becoming a wheel manufacturer distributor monopoly. They just went in and bought a company called MHT Wheels, which was one of the biggest wheel companies in the United States, on a $780 million cash buyout just to buy up and absorb MHT now, and they will pretty much be the only company in the entire country now that will forge wheels in the United States, and they will control the entire market. There will be no competition with them, and of course, there will be no living with them at a certain point. This is what these bankers do, acquisitions and mergers. They continue to buy up more and more and more and more until they own all the chips, all the monopoly places on the board. The only thing you get to have is, you know, what's that first one before pass go, you know, the slum area that's like $60 to buy it. All the other high-end stuff, they own it. The utilities, they own it. The railroads, they own it. The electric, they own it. They own it all, and they control it all, and they make billions upon billions upon billions, if not trillions of dollars, by owning everything. Right? I told you guys that the other day. The banks don't produce anything. They don't manufacture anything. They don't actually bring anything to the marketplace except high interest loans. And with the ability of those high interest loans, they come in and are allowed to do 40 to 1 spreads on the amount of cash they have in the bank deposits. 40 to 1. So if you've got $1 million in savings in the bank in cash, they can loan $40 million out on those loans and have 4, 5, 6% interest on that $40 million. And then they continue to take that money that they make in interest and they buy more and they buy more and they buy more companies. This is what they've done, and now we've seen it happen with Sprint and T-Mobile merger finally being approved to really bring out hardcore this new 5G network, Dad.
You know, Austin, we were at the bank the other day, you and I were, and I think BT&T and SunTrust are going together, whatever it is, I forgot the names, and I started laughing, and I told the bank president, I said, the Rothschild banking conglomerate, and she said, started laughing, and she said, what do you mean? And I explained it to her. She said, well, I don't know. I said, why don't you do the math and find out who the investment houses are? I mean, this is exactly what they do. They buy up all these banks, and that way they can control. This is the big problem they had in the 30s. After they contracted the M1 money supplies, they had all these pesky little banks that weren't members of the Federal Reserve banks. That's the home savings and loans, little town banks and all that. They had to run them all out of business. And so when they contracted the money supply, everybody went to the banks to withdraw their money. The banks didn't have enough on the reserve because they were only mainly maintaining reserves. And the banks were insolvent, and they all went out of business. A lot of them, thousands of them, all over the country. And people lost everything. That's when they started the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which is a joke because it doesn't cover much of anything. And that's what happened. And so that's why they did that, Austin. They want to own all the chips. And I told her, I said, you might as well just put, you know, SunTrust would put a big X and put Rothschild Bank. That's what you need to put. And she kind of looked at me kind of funny. I said, no, I'm not kidding. I said, this is what they do. By the way, real quick health thing. Commonly prescribed drugs are tied to nearly a 50% higher dementia risk in older adults, a new study says. It's from CNN, if you can believe they actually came out with something true. Scientists have found a possible link between anticholinergic drugs and an increased risk of dementia. A study in the Journal of American Medical Association suggests that the link is strongest for certain diseases of these types of drugs, used with these drugs, particularly antidepressants, bladder, such as, let me give you all the names of these different things, antipsychotics, and other anti-epileptic drugs, which can massively increase the risks of senile dementia and now Alzheimer's disease. Researchers wrote in the study that there was nearly a 50% increase in the odds of dementia associated with total exposure of more than 1,000 doses within a 10-year period, which is equivalent to an older adult taking a strong drug daily for 3 years compared with no exposure. That's ridiculous. That's a lot of 50% increase in senile dementia. The study is important because it strengthens a growing body of evidence showing that these drugs have long-term associations with dementia. Guys, I've talked about this so many times, about how there's so many drugs out there that older people over the age of 60, that would be me, should never take because it massively increases the risk of senile dementia. Same thing with flu shots. Three flu shots in a row over the age of 50 increase the risk of senile dementia by up to 50% because of the mercury compounds. And you've got to avoid these types of things. You just have to stay away from these types of drugs. People are always asking me, what kind of prescriptions do you take? And my response is, none. How's your blood pressure? 110 over 55, 160, or whatever, 110 over 60, I think. They go, why is it so low? Because I work out 6 days a week and I eat clean. Well, you have to take something. I said, well, every once in a while I may take an aspirin if I have a headache. That's just very, very rare because if I eat the right foods, I don't get headaches. If I stay up with coffee, I don't get headaches. But every once in a while I have a cup of coffee. But you've got to take some drugs sometime. And I'm like, well, yeah, every once in a while if I get exposed or get a bite or something, I may take a Benadryl, which knocks me out. I got to sleep for 12 hours. I said, but that's about it. You don't take, no, I don't do drugs. Don't have any prescriptions. You think, well, crazy. That's crazy. That's what, yeah, but the guys, listen to me. It's because I eat clean, I take care of myself, and I do what I say I'm going to do as far as taking care of myself. And I'm going to say one thing about that, do what I say I'm going to do. I got a little bone to pick. I had somebody make a commitment to me here recently, and I'm not going to mention any names. And I'm talking to young people now. When you make a commitment to somebody, and they invest in plant equipment or whatever, and you say, I'm going to do something for X amount of dollars or X amount of money per hour or X amount of money per week, and then all of a sudden the person goes in and makes a big investment in something or whatever, and then you decide you're not going to do that because now you want to extort more money. Guys, that ain't right. Okay? Yesterday, I had a friend of mine call me up. His wife's having some inner ear issues. And he's a pastor. And he's not taking care of himself. And he had to have knee replacement surgery and has all kinds of health issues. And it was terribly obese and had to have his stomach stapled. And I mean, all this stuff, right? And I mean, the guy's he's a physical wreck. And his, you know, his wife's got all the health problems now. But he's a really nice guy. I really like the guy. And he called me up yesterday and he goes, hey, you know, I need some stuff for my wife. She has some inner ear issues. And he asked me what it would cost. And I told him. And I misquoted him, quite frankly. And I ended up actually telling him one thing, and because I knew he didn't have a lot of money, because he's like driving Uber now, bless his heart. He's like 71 years old, Uber driver, you know, former pastor. I mean, made some bad choices. And I went ahead and gave him what I told him, and I actually lost money on it. Austin was really awesome with that. We're losing money on this. And I'm like, I know. He said, no, we're actually losing money. It's below cost. And I said, yeah, I know. I said, doesn't matter. I told him that's what it's going to cost. I said, I know better than to do that. I said, but I like this guy, and I would give it to him for free, even if it wasn't below cost. I just give you whatever. Guys, when you make commitments to people, and they go out of their way to do things because you've made that commitment, or even if they don't, if you just say, I'm going to work for you for X amount of dollars per day or per week or whatever, here's what I'm going to do, here's how many hours I'm going to put in, or here's what I'm going to do, and they go out of their way to do what they say they're going to do for you, but you decide you're going to change the deal without talking to them about it. Guys, the world calls that karma, all right? And, you know, the Bible says, if you treat evil for good, that evil will never leave your house. Let me repeat that. If you treat evil for good, evil's going to never leave your house. And I've seen it happen to so many people. Listen to me for a second, my friends. We're having a little fireside chat right now. You guys are hanging out by the fireplace, and we're talking. And I got your kids on one arm, and I'm talking to you, and we're just talking, and we're saying, look, kids, you make commitments, you're going to do it. Years ago, I had a boathouse, and I had my neighbor who's not a good boat driver who told me he was, break off a side of the boat, hit it on the side of the dock. And it wasn't big. It probably weighed 5 pounds, and it was part of a tower that held a wakeboard that we never used. But it fell down into the water, and the water's like 5 feet deep, and it's crystal clear. And you can see to the bottom. And Harrison was down there with me. Harrison was like 8 years old. This is like 12 years ago. And I said to him, and Harrison said, don't worry, Dad, I'll jump down there and get it, because he was in a swimsuit. And it was probably in April, maybe May. I said, okay, whatever you want to do, buddy, because it was warm outside. And so we pulled the boat out so he could get it, because we went getting pinched in there. And then he put a foot in the water. It was a little catwalk around the dock. It's like a foot wide. And he goes, oh, the water's too cold. I'm not going to get this. And the water was probably 70 degrees. And I said, nah, bud, you made Dan, the guy who broke off the piece, you made him a commitment. You said you're going to get this. We're all dressed. We got long pants on. We're fully dressed. And I said, you got to follow through with your commitments. And he goes, well, I'm not going to get it. And I said, yeah, you are. I said, you shouldn't have said you were going to get it. I said, it's not over your head. You're a great swimmer. You just got to reach down there and grab it. I'll get you a towel. And he goes, well, I'm not going to do it. I said, yeah, you are. And Dan says, oh, no, Ted, he doesn't have to do it. I said, yeah, he does. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, yeah, he does. I said, he made a commitment. He's got to finish this. And he goes, so finally, Harrison was on the catwalk, and I'm standing between him and the dock. So the only way off the catwalk was through me or swimming. And he looked at Dan. He goes, he's going to throw me in. And I looked at Harris, and Dan goes, oh, he's not going to throw you in, Harrison, it doesn't matter. And I looked at Dan, I said, yeah, I'm going to throw him in. I said, he's not going to step away from a commitment he made. And so Harrison jumped in the water, grabbed the piece. Now, this is the same kid now who graduated college at 18, graduated with his MBA at 19, accepted into multiple law schools at 18, accepted into the College of Law at Florida State at 19, and starting law school in the fall. Same kid. You think, wow. Because I taught him, when you make a commitment, when you tell somebody you're going to do something, you do it. Same kid. Same thing happened with Austin. When Austin was young, he was in a baseball team. He was playing T-ball. He didn't want to play it. He didn't like it. Didn't want to do it again. I said, bud, I said, it's okay if you don't play next year. But you made a commitment to the team. You're going to finish the season. Same thing with Harrison. Harrison playing baseball. He played it for 1 year. Played it for the year. Didn't like it. I said, didn't make a difference. You said you wanted to do it. You made a commitment. You're finishing it. You're following through with it. Both Austin decided he wanted to get a black belt. Expensive. It took 5 years. He started getting up to the higher ranks, and he didn't want to finish it. He said, no. You said you're going to finish it. You're going to finish it. You're going to get your black belt. And he finished it. Got a first degree black belt. Harrison, same thing. He decided after he got halfway through his black belt that he didn't want to finish it anymore. I said, no, you made a commitment. You're going to finish it. Guys, you've got to train your children in the way they should go, and when they're old, they're about to part from it. It's kind of like, you get into an argument with your wife and you're married. You made a commitment. And this is barring Christian scriptural reasons now. You get mad because of the dishes or something stupid, or the laundry or something stupid. And you guys start fighting about stuff. You made a commitment. You got to stick through it. Same thing with raising kids. You make a commitment to these little brats until they're 18 years old. Now, if they want to leave when they're 18 and do their own thing, have at it. All my children think it's funny, because as soon as they turn 18, I drop the reins. I drop them. Well, you mean you don't care? I don't care. Do what you want to do. I said, you deal with the consequences of your decisions now. That's the reason your life has turned out as well as it has until you're 18, because I made all your decisions and helped you get through it. Now it's your turn to learn and make sure you do the right decisions. Now you deal with consequences. You guys, train up your children in the way they should go. I can't tell you how many business deals that I've done, that I've made commitments to do things, and I can't believe I got myself into this. I don't want to do this. But I follow through and I do it. That's being a man of integrity. That's being a man of your word. That's being someone who can basically come back and say, hey, I did my get best. I ran the good race. I fought the good fight. I did the best I could. I hope you call me a good and faithful servant of God, because I did my best. That's who we're supposed to be as Christians, not some flake. Guys, teach your children the right way. Start raising alpha men for boys. Start raising alpha females. Make your wives and your girls and your sons. Teach them how to be in a marriage and how to work together with their husbands, both male and female, and how to have a great, great marriage. That's how you do this. having some of their faith in Christ. I love you guys. I appreciate you too. Really enjoyed having Brad as my studio audience today. So, guys, I appreciate you. I love you. I had the opportunity. I take it back. I have not yet prayed with Sharon this morning. I've not yet prayed for you guys. I'll pray for you guys in a few minutes. I love you, and you guys mean the world to me. Also, go ahead and close it up, and I'll do the write-up some. Bye-bye.
Got it, absolutely. And thank you again for a lot of the positive emails and feedback. We really do appreciate all the support. And if you guys need anything, as you know, I tell you all the time, feel free to give us a call. We're always here to help you guys out the best as possible. And always check out the website. Have lots of different specials and promos going on right now, including the product of the week, which will be updated here shortly, the vitamin E. That's our super strong dose mixed tocopherol vitamin E. This is an incredibly good product. It is just loaded up with pretty much every type of gamma, alpha, delta, beta, tocopherol, and tocotrienol. Do some research on it. You see a lot of vitamin E's are not created the same. Most people don't tell you that. But you buy a lot of the cheap synthetic stuff, you know, from China that they sell, you know, at the big box stores. And it's just garbage. It's synthetic vitamin E. A lot of times it has zero mixed tocopherols. It'll be one basis of tocophenol, and it's generally just one synthetic blend, and they try to put some high number, high milligram, or high IU dosage, and a lot of times you got to look at the actual use of what they have in it, where they're getting it from, and if is it bioactive, and all the different types of aspects to it. So be sure to check that out on the website. That will be up shortly on sale at healthmasters.com. Incredibly good for cholesterol, really good for blood viscosity. The vitamin E is one of the most important things, in my opinion, in a stack to help out with blood flow, circulation, blood pressure, and so forth. It keeps the blood viscosity so thin, naturally, healthily thin, without having to use blood thinners or any other of these toxic drugs they try to put you on just to make your blood slightly thin. So be sure to check it out, healthmasters.com. We appreciate the support. Have a blessed, safe, awesome night. Stay sharp, stay awake, be prepared for anything. You guys have an awesome night. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, as always.